took a shot of cocaine and I shot my woman down. Went right home and I went to bed. I stuck that loving 44 beneath my head. Got up next morning and I grabbed my gun. I took a shot of cocaine and away I run. Made a good run, but I run too slow. They overtook me down in Juarez, Mexico. Laid in the hot joint, taking the pill. In walked the sheriff from Jericho Hill. He said, Willie Lee, your name is not Jack Brown. You're the dirty hack that shot your woman down. Yes, oh yes, my name is Willie Lee. If you've got a warrant, just read it to me. Shot her down, cause she made me slow. I thought I was her daddy, but she had five more. I was dressed in black. They put me on a train and they took me back. Had no friend for to go my bail. They slapped my daughter carcass in that county jail. The next morning about a 9:30, I spied a sheriff coming down the line. He kinda coughed as he cleared his throat. He said, come on you dirty hack to the district court. Into the courtroom my trial began, where I was held by 12 honest men. Just before the jury started out, I saw that dirty judge commence to look about. In about 5 minutes in walked a man, holding the verdict in his right hand. The verdict read in the first degree. I hollered, Lordy, Lordy, have mercy on me. The judge smiled as he picked up his pen. 99 years in the Folsom State Pen. 99 years underneath that ground. I can't forget today I shot that bad bitch down. Come on, you gotta listen unto me. Lay off that whiskey and let that cocaine be. Sue it!
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for kids, teens, or young adults. It's just not.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals and volatile organic compounds into your body.
And nicotine, the same highly addictive substance found in regular cigarettes.
Nicotine can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
Affecting learning, memory, attention, and impulse control. And priming the brain for other addictions.
Vaping products also come in kid-friendly flavors that can make them appealing to youth.
And many kids also use other drugs, like marijuana, in vaping devices.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media,
many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping, because when you talk, they hear you.
For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Let's start today with inflation. Now, I want to approach this from an economic perspective because I've been getting dozens of emails from people wanting an explanation about how inflation eventually goes away. And I've touched on this a little bit, but let's talk about it in more detail. Now, when I say I don't want to make this a political story, there are some political statements I have to make because there is so much political misinformation around inflation. There has been inflation, high inflation all over the world. Some countries with higher inflation than the United States, some countries with lower inflation than the United States. There are many in the U.S. who want to blame Joe Biden for inflation. I have found no evidence that Joe Biden is to blame. And in fact, the U.S. is not at the highest or at the lowest level of inflation over the last year. This is a global phenomenon related to a lot of different things that we've talked about. And for those pointing specifically to Joe Biden's COVID relief package as the reason for the inflation, remember that Donald Trump did two such packages and they were bigger than Joe Biden. So if that's why you blame Biden, you have to blame Trump at least two times as much. And none of these people are. So like with the political stuff out of the way, there's lots of confusion about like how does inflation eventually go away? And one of the realities about inflation is that sustained inflation will eventually reduce inflation. And I'm going to explain to you how that works. But when people talk about markets and cycles, this is actually what we mean. There are many examples of markets that don't work or are kind of pie in the sky fantasy. They don't relate to how the real world works. When it comes to inflation, ultimately resolving inflation, it actually does work this way. So to start this, let's talk about what is a good level of inflation or deflation or no price changes. Like, what would we want? Well, a really high level of inflation is bad because people very quickly can't afford things. It's bad for the economy because things get so expensive that others don't buy anything. So it's bad for business. It makes it so that people's wages no longer can keep up with the cost of living. So really high inflation is bad. And we're seeing high inflation, at least by American historical standards right now. It might seem like, well, then is deflation good? Because if prices go down, people can afford stuff. No, deflation is also bad. And again, the framework here is the framework is the traditional understanding of how modern economies work. You could say, David, sir, the entire framework is crap. Put it in the trash. And that's a different discussion. But at least in the modern economic framework, deflation is bad. Because if you expect things to get cheaper in the future, you would wait to buy them. I mean, okay, things you absolutely need. You're not going to say, well, I won't eat for a month because food will be cheaper in a month. No, then you're dead. You need food. But with a ton of different purchases, if you expect prices to be lower in the future because we are in the middle of a deflationary situation, you would say, I'm going to wait to buy stuff. And when you don't buy, businesses don't have money coming in, meaning they have to lay off workers. And now those workers don't have money to buy things because they've been laid off. So that's a deflationary spiral. That's also bad. So in traditional economics, the understanding is you want a little bit of inflation. A little bit of inflation is where economic growth comes from. A little bit of inflation is the reason why people would, you're not going to go hoarding supplies, but you would purchase things. If I want to look at a car and the car is affordable today, the car is 10 grand and I can afford 10 grand. If I expect the car will be 8 grand next year, I wait. I don't buy it. If the car is already unaffordable, I don't buy it. But if the car is 10 grand today and I expect it to be $10,500 in a year, that's a pretty good reason to go and buy the car today. So I'm now supporting the dealership. I'm supporting the manufacturer. Okay, so that's the framework for why we say a little bit of inflation is good. Let's talk about then what happens when there is inflation. Inflation initially creates more inflation. People fear, wow, prices are going up. They might go even higher. I've got to go and buy stuff now before I can no longer afford it. That increases inflation even more. and things start to cost more for workers. So the workers demand more wages, and to cover the increased wages, the employers start charging more for the products, and you have an inflationary cycle. This only works in the short term because you can only pre-purchase so much stuff. You can only get ahead before prices go up so long. Eventually, inflation is going to reduce the purchasing power for people. People aren't going to be able to buy as much stuff. A great example is like with a house. If you've got a down payment saved up and you can afford a $1,000 a month mortgage, at a 3% mortgage, maybe your house that you can afford is 200 grand. When mortgage rates go up, as we see inflation, you can no longer afford a $200,000 house, because to keep your payment at $1,000 because of the higher rate, now you can only afford a $180,000 house. This then puts pressure on the home seller to decrease the price. So eventually, inflation, which takes away purchasing power, starts to make a downward pressure on prices. And that ultimately is what reduces the inflation. Now, obviously, there's problems with doing nothing, because in the short and medium term, while this is going on, people start to be unable to afford things that they need. Poor people are hurt the most by this inflationary cycle. So you've got to figure out how do we deal with that. And there's a whole bunch that's beyond the scope of this segment, but there's a whole bunch of things that governments can do to say, well, let's figure out how to support folks who can't afford certain necessities during this period of time. High inflation can hurt business innovation because it starts to get more expensive to start a business. Someone might say, I'm not going to start the business. Well, it's a business that could have employed people. It's a business that could have manufactured a product or provided a service. So that's not good for the economy either. And you've got to figure out how to deal with that. None of this is to pretend that anything is any worse or better than it actually is. It's to gain an understanding of how longer term inflation will reduce inflation. In the meantime, we have to take very seriously the effect that it has on people, the effect that it has on the economy. But for people who say, well, what can't Joe Biden just like sign something and fix this issue in an economy the size of the economy of the United States? No, the answer is no. And the mechanism that will ultimately reduce that inflation to some degree is inflation itself. Let me know if that's clear or if it's not clear. We have been seeing mass shooting after mass shooting after mass shooting make national headlines recently. And we have polling that suggests to us, hey, you know what? Americans really are hungry for some gun safety regulations. They want them. And there is a very interesting poll from Pew Research compiled by Vox. And we're going to put a Vox graphic up on the screen. And when you look nationally, yes, led by Democrats, but Republicans also, we see greater than 85% support for some mental health restrictions on who can own firearms. We see more than 80% support for background checks, what we would call universal background checks, meaning there is no situation where a gun is sold that would be exempt from a background check. We see about 78% of the country against open carry without a permit. There are some states where you can open carry with no permit. And even the less popular stuff like banning assault style weapons or banning high capacity magazines, even those provisions have close to 2/3 support, right around 65%. So very clearly, Republicans have seen the polling. Republicans are now understanding, hey, a lot of these things are popular with Americans. We as Republicans can't just be the party of saying do nothing, arm teachers and eliminate doors or whatever they've been talking about. So now Mitch McConnell and some other Republicans are saying, you know, we are OK. We're supportive of the framework that's been established for this Senate gun safety deal. So we're going to look at a clip. But I have to tell you, I am so skeptical of everything that's going on here on both sides, and I'll explain all of that in a moment. But here's Mitch McConnell yesterday making headlines. Wow, Republicans being reasonable. They support. Wait, do they support the bill or do they support the framework? Well, that's a key distinction. Take a listen to this.
Senator Cornyn, who, as you know, I asked to be the point person on our side to see if we could come to an outcome after these horrible school shootings, and his teammates indicated, as you have reported, a coming together behind a framework which hopefully can be turned into legislative language and passed. For myself, I'm comfortable with the framework, and if the legislation ends up reflecting what the framework indicates, I'll be supportive.
Right. So a number of ifs in there, right? I'm supportive of the framework, which hopefully will get us to a bill. And if the legislation reflects what's in the framework, then it is hopefully something that we can support. Now, there's two sides to this. This is a great opportunity for Republicans to say this and then oppose it, either because, well, the legislation ended up being different than the framework, or we're disappointed in what Democrats ultimately put here. But there's another aspect to this, which is the bill itself is pretty damn crappy. Now, I don't want to just listen. I am OK with incremental change and taking steps in the right direction. And if this is all that can be passed, well, we've got to pass it. I'm going to tell you what's in this framework. But it is pretty damn weak. Very, very weak. There are a few different things here. So first of all, there are red flag provisions that are in the framework, meaning that you have a process that will allow you to do sort of some kind for those individuals who are believed to have mental health conditions that should prevent them from having a firearm. This is a framework that would allow some of those to be established. There are 19 states and Washington, D.C. that already have some version of that. And that's something that would be in the bill. And listen, Republicans have been talking about this is a mental health issue. So that's something they're generally supportive of, although some Republicans are saying you're kind of eliminating due process instead of actually saying, well, you are now a felon and you can't have a firearm, which would be due process. Some Republicans are against these red flag laws, saying you're basically just saying some psychologist can sign off and then you don't get your constitutional right to a firearm. So that could be a problem. They want a more rigorous process for background checks, specifically on people between 18 and 21, which would include an enhanced review where you contact state and local law enforcement. If you have criminal records, it could be disqualifying. There's a proposal about who should have to register as a firearms dealer for the purposes of conducting background checks. There's some squishiness to that where you can be a dealer. You and I would look at it and we would say this is a dealer, but they don't currently have to register as such and thus don't have to comply with background checks laws. There should be no question of that. Every sale should require a background check no matter where it happens. They also want new penalties on straw purchasing of firearms to improve the prosecution of traffickers. This is where someone who can legally get guns buys a bunch of them and then sells them to people who cannot legally get guns. Those are called straw purchases. And then they want money for mental health services as well. So there's nothing remotely controversial here in the framework. Any sane country would do all of these things and much more. But that's exactly the problem. Number one, the bill is so milquetoast that it doesn't do almost any of the things that I outlined in my framework for what should be done. And at the same time, Republicans still might not support it. So this is, yet again, it's a good chance maybe to show that Republicans will block even the weakest gun safety provisions. But at the same time, maybe Republicans will support it because it does so little. And then they can say, look, the Democrats put together a bill, we supported it, and we still have gun violence, which, of course, we would have because this bill has absolutely no teeth. So I hate to say it. It all seems like it's a great setup for the Republican Party. Here's a bonus clip. Here's Mitch McConnell being asked why people who can't legally buy cigarettes should be able to buy semi-automatic weapons. Mitch McConnell supported raising the age at which you can buy tobacco from 18 to 21. And Mitch McConnell does not answer.
Why should Americans who are 18 years old not be allowed to buy cigarettes, which is something you support, that ban, but should be allowed to buy assault weapons?
Good try. I've already told you my view of
it's not really a try. It's a good question.
Framework. If it leads to a piece of legislation, I intend to support it. I think it's progress for the country. And I think the the bipartisan group has done the best they can to get total support. And the background check enhancement for that age group, I think, is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, it's so weak. A background check enhancement just for those 18 to 21. So Mitch not falling for any trick questions like why should you be able to get an AR-15 but not cigarettes, which is really not a trick question. It's a good question. Let me know what you think is the fate of this bill. Find me on Twitter at @DPacman. We'll take a quick break and be right back. All right. Don't worry. We're not going to spend a ton of time on this, but I do want to go over the last sort of 24 hours of reactions from the Trump camp to the January 6th Trump riot committee hearings. We're first going to look at some of the things that Donald Trump posted to his platform, Truth Social.
Truth Central.
Of course. And we're also going to look at a supposed 12-page letter that Trump wrote. Well, let me say it a different way. It's a 12-page letter, a 12-page letter that Trump supposedly wrote. We're going to look at that as well. So let's start with Truth Central or Truth Social. Donald Trump going absolutely bonkers on his social media platform about these hearings, starting with, quote, word out that the reason the unselects have canceled Wednesday's kangaroo court is a total lack of interest leading to very poor television ratings. Could this be so? Maybe they should try getting a more talented Hollywood producer than the former president of ABC Fake News. He didn't do so well. So this is a calculated talking point from Republicans that nobody cares about the hearings. Now, of course, it's not true. Listen, it's not the Super Bowl. Okay, we all acknowledge that. These are boring hearings by traditional standards, although I've found them quite riveting myself. But there were about 22 million people who watched the first night of broadcast. That doesn't include any of the online audiences, which were huge. So the audience has actually been fine. Trump then on Truth Social saying, quote, does anybody notice that the Unselect Committee refuses to discuss or debate in any way, shape or form the many irrefutable types of election fraud and irregularities found in the 2020 election? This is cancel culture. Because they know that they have zero chance of winning that debate. So sad to see our capital C country falling apart. Now, the opposite is true. In fact, every single allegation of voter fraud or irregularities has been significantly refuted. Not only have they been refuted by Republicans in testimony during the committee hearings, including from William Barr and others, every single claim has been investigated. Close to 70 such claims were brought to courts, and the courts found that there was no merit or that there was no standing. I will gladly say some of the courts took it as a standing issue. Allegations of supposed dead voters were investigated. The voters were found alive and well. A handful, you know, died after legally voting absentee, and then they died by election day or by the day that the investigation was done. There was some junior senior confusion. It's been investigated. Massive dumps, as Donald Trump likes to say. You know about that.
Big, massive dumps.
Yeah. Big, massive dumps of voting votes in boxes being brought in overnight. It's been looked at. It's been widely debunked. All of these claims have actually been refuted. And so Donald Trump just lying there. Trump then posting to Truth Social, the Unselect Committee refused to debate the election results. The reason for the massive crowd on January 6th, because they can't. And again, they are in the position of wanting something unreasonable. We have election results. Election results are not something we debate. We don't say, hey, you know what? I believe that a flat tax is best for the economy, and you believe a progressive tax is best for the economy. Let's debate it and each bring forward our perspectives and historical evidence. No. We counted the ballots and Joe Biden won. When there have been audits or recounts done, Joe Biden won. That's it. There's nothing to debate as far as that goes. Then Donald Trump posting, the unselects are going against me because I am the only one who can fix our endangered country. And they want to destroy it. People want to go back to where we were just 2 years ago. Again, the weaponized narcissism, only I can fix it. All of the things Trump told us he would fix during his presidency, he did not fix. and then Trump also attacking William Barr. William Barr, who, by the way, still said he would vote for Trump over a Democrat in 2024. For all of the criticism that Barr has levied against Trump, he still said, oh, I'm not going to vote for a Democrat. If it's Trump versus a Democrat in 2024, I'll vote for Trump. Even though he said that, Trump is furious with Barr because Barr said, yeah, all of these claims are BS. And Trump posting, quote, former Attorney General Bill Barr, a rhino, if there ever was one.
A rhino named Mitt Romney.
Yeah, a rhino means Republican in name only. He didn't have the stamina or courage to go after vote fraud, was afraid he was going to be impeached. No guts, no glory. So Trump turning on William Barr as well, really losing it. Now, these things Trump definitely did write. What we're going to look at next, I don't believe Trump wrote. Yesterday, or late the day before, a 12-page letter was released to the media, supposedly written by Donald Trump, weighing in on the Trump riot committee hearings. Now, I don't believe for a second that Donald Trump really wrote a 12-page letter. Trump doesn't write and Trump doesn't read. All he's capable of, as far as we've seen, is tweet-style messages, often with strange grammar, spelling, and syntax. So I don't believe Trump wrote a 12-page letter. But I do believe that Trump sat somewhere and told someone what to write. And Chris Saliza from CNN received the letter and gave us a list of the wackiest things. And here are some key moments from this statement that shows us how the right is thinking of these hearings. Number one, if they had any real evidence, they'd hold real hearings with equal representation. Remember, Republicans opted out of that. There was a framework for an actual bipartisan committee, 10 members, five Republicans, five Democrats, Democratic chair, Republican vice chair, and both the chair and vice chair have to agree on every subpoena. Republicans rejected it. So Democrats did what they could, which is they've got Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger on the panel. So that's their fault. Two, they used the illegally constituted committee to put on a smoke and mirrors show for the American people in a pitiful last ditch effort to deceive the American public again. There's nothing illegal about the committee. Just nothing. We've had other committees, the Benghazi one. We've had others. Perfectly legal. Number three, they've refused to allow their political opponents to participate in the process. They've excluded exculpatory witnesses and anyone who so easily points out the flaws in their story. Again, as Chris Saliza writes, Republicans crushed the actual bipartisan committee that they wanted to do, that it is because of Republicans that they don't have more Republicans on the committee. And also a whole bunch of the pro-Trump people that were subpoenaed didn't go. And that's now the subject of legislation that includes Steve Bannon and Peter Navarro. Four, the unselect pseudo committee has coordinated with their media puppets to broadcast their witnesses on TV without opposition, cross-examination, or rebuttal evidence. Again, more than 1,000 depositions were taken of all sorts of witnesses. It is untrue that that is what was done. And then a whole bunch of other just repetition of lies. I won't look at all of these, but number seven is they illegally inflated voter rolls. That's unproven. They illegally allowed harvested and stuffed ballots. No evidence of that. They abused the use of mail-in ballots. There's no evidence of that. They physically removed Republicans from counting facilities. That's untrue. Now, there are random Republicans who showed up demanding to oversee the election who were not allowed to because there's a process for establishing observers. There were Republican and Democratic observers. There were people who just showed up demanding access. It's sort of like if I go, you know, if I go to a court and I say I want to sit alongside the judge, they would say, well, no, you haven't been selected. You're not the judge. In the same way, if I'm not actually an election observer, I don't have a right to just show up and be given power there. But there is no evidence for any of those claims. And a whole bunch of other stuff that doesn't really have any meaning, like Donald Trump writing in this letter, on election night, America watched as my lead grew and grew over Biden as I was set to claim another victory. We expected the red mirage. We expected that the early vote would favor Trump and that as the cities were counted overnight and into the next day, it would start to point more in the direction of Joe Biden. All of these things we expected. So I don't believe Trump wrote this, but I do believe he had input. And it really shows us that they aren't changing their talking points. Every day that passes, we have more of an empirical basis to reject their claims, but they continue making the exact same claims day after day after day. Now, at the end of the day, I don't know that these hearings are really going to have any impact. They're getting an okay audience. My guess is the people watching are mostly the people who already don't believe the things that Donald Trump has been saying. So whether these hearings will have any impact whatsoever remains to be seen. But the lies that they are telling continue to be the exact same lies. And at this point, I don't know who's falling for them. We'll have more on this on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. We'll be back right after this short break. So I mentioned this yesterday in passing, but I want to talk about it a little bit more because it is really a fascinating story. We are now learning something that I knew, and if you watch this show, you also knew about the fundraising that was done in the aftermath of the 2020 election by the Trump campaign and the Republican Party, supposedly to fight for the true results and to fund audits and to fund recounts and all these different things. We all knew it was a scam. And the last I checked in with you about it, about $70 or $75 million had been donated by just random people who, many of whom don't really have the money to be donating, although some millionaires donated as well, to Donald Trump. And we knew that it was a scam. If you looked at the fine print, you actually could see that in some cases, 50 cents on every dollar or even more were earmarked to pay off Trump campaign debt. But it's way worse than that. One of the things we learned from the committee hearings, the January 6th Trump riot committee hearing on Monday, was that the entire $250 million official Trump election integrity fund, or whatever they called it, it was a complete and total grift scam used in many cases to pay outrageous speaking fees and salaries to Trump's friends and family. That's the bottom line. And I know it's sort of like, well, of course. I mean, look at what happened with Trump University. Look at all the different scams that Donald Trump has run. Of course it was a scam, but it wasn't obvious to the people who needed to hear it the most, the Trumpists. So let's dig into that a little bit more. Zoe Lofgren, Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren, a Democrat who's on the January 6th committee, she was interviewed by Jake Tapper and they talked about this, and they specifically talk about Donald Trump Jr.'s then girlfriend, I believe now fiance, Kimberly Guilfoyle. Check this out.
You showed people deceived talking right. about why they were there on January 6th.
Well, people were conned by the former president. They were conned into believing that the election had been stolen and that they should go to the Capitol as the president asked them to. They were conned out. I think the average donation from those email, false email requests was something like $17.
Mm-hmm.
These were people who weren't rich people.
Right.
They were conned by the president. It was a big lie, and it was also a big ripoff.
And you say you were just asked, I think by Manu Raju, if the committee has found evidence that Trump and his family, quote, personally benefited from donations. And you said, yes, that's a serious allegation. Do you have more details? Is that a crime?
I don't know. We're a legislative committee, so that's for somebody else to decide. But for example, we know that Guilfoyle was paid for the introduction she gave at the speech. I mean, on January 6th, she received compensation for that.
But is that a crime?
I'm not saying it's a crime, but I think it's a grift.
It's a grift because you're telling Trump people, Trump supporters out there in the hinterlands, give us money to
go to court to defend
right.
this election when in fact.
And then instead, Kim Guilfoyle, who's Don Trump Jr.'s fiance, gets paid money for
$60,000 for two and a half minutes. You had money going to Mark Meadows Foundation and to another foundation
yep.
that hired the Trump supporters who'd lost their jobs. So it wasn't what he said to his donors. This is to defend the election. It was an entirely different purpose.
Okay, so you get the point. What a teacher makes in a year, hopefully, after having years of experience in education, many teachers don't make this, okay? Kimberly Guilfoyle, the fiance of Donald Trump Jr., makes for a 2.5 minute speech on the day January 6th, paid for by the people who mostly don't make $60,000 a year. She gets it for 2.5 minutes. Imagine giving in some cases, your Social Security check to a billionaire, supposedly to fund lawyers who are trying to sort out the election for us. And then it actually goes $400 a second to his son's future wife. Okay. And what's amazing is how they are such transparent grifters, but people fall for it anyway. Now, I know that some of you say, screw them, screw them. And yeah, to some degree, okay. I mean, they a fool and their money are soon parted. If you believe after Trump did all the other scams, we're going to build a wall that Mexico is going to pay for. But they, some of them fell for that. Obviously, it wasn't going to happen. We're going to replace Obamacare with something beautiful. Never even got a proposal. If they still fall for it, then they deserve it. Sure, that's fine. And it's less about the individual. But it is a reminder that these are not people. The entire political constituency of Trump are people he mostly hates. Trump, as a rich New York City guy, has spent most of his life trying to stay isolated and insulated from the very people who he cons out of money. And once they're no longer useful, Trump throws them out like his dirty diapers, for lack of a better term. And the criminality question is a different one. Is it arguably fraudulent? Yes, it's arguably fraudulent. But like Zoe Lofgren says, they are a legislative committee. They are not law enforcement. And that's going to have to be looked at. Aaron Rupar had a really, really good piece about this, actually, in which he outlines some of the different payments that were made. And we're going to link to that and you can check that out. But absolutely outrageous stuff. Hey, I have to tell you, I know that we don't typically prefer to take pleasure in others' misfortune, but when it comes to Newsmax, I'm taking pleasure. Newsmax, the radical right-wing media network, has had a big shakeup in terms of their on-air talent. As reported by Radar Online, Greg Kelly and Sean Spicer have been sidelined at Newsmax, and one of the things Newsmax has done is they brought in former Fox News host Greta Van Susteren. Greta Van Susteren had her first episode of the show yesterday. It was a technical disaster that is delightful to me. Oh, but David, oh, sir, you're making fun of people.
That is a frickin' predator right
no,
there.
No, 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 no. This is disastrous for America, the fact that Newsmax has an audience. I'm not saying shut them down. I'm not saying violate their ability. Let them do whatever they want. But I want them to fail. And the technical hilarity that took place yesterday, Greta Van Susteren tried interviewing Chuck Grassley, the Republican senator, and it just wasn't working. Tech disaster after disaster. And I love it. I love every second of it. I admit it.
For more, ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley joins us. Good evening, Senator. And it has gotten absolutely intolerable for the American people. These prices, gas, food, everything's going straight up. What can both parties do together? What is the willingness of both parties to do together that we can rescue our economy?
You'll have to come through clearer than you have so far. I couldn't make out what you're saying.
I'm asking you, sir, that people are suffering so much from gas prices, food prices. What can Republicans and Democrats, what are they willing to do together, and what can they do together to help the economy?
Okay. I'm sorry. It's so muffled with, it sounds like you're talking in a cave.
It sounds like my callers.
Can't hear anything you've got to ask me.
And I totally understand that, Senator, but this is our first night on air, and as you can imagine, we have some gremlins in the system trying to get the question off to you. So let me ask you a question sort of just generally, sir.
He probably can hear general questions better than specific ones. So this is a smart strategy.
Do you have any sort of thought on food prices? I know you're from a farm state.
If you're still trying to interview me, I can't make out what you're saying.
All right. Senator, thank you very much, and we'll give
and
up.
I'm sorry.
Wow, what an explosive interview. Am I a bad person because I love that? I mean, I'll take the hit. If I'm just a bad person because the show went completely off the rails, I will accept that. But I absolutely love that. Okay, so that big shakeup at Newsmax, but no shortage of insanity at Newsmax where the guest could hear the interviewer. Let's talk about that next. There's a guy who is a host on Newsmax. His name is Chris Salcido. When he had a radio show, I appeared on Chris Salcido's show. It was completely bonkers. We just talked past each other. The interview made no sense. Chris Salcido now has a show on Newsmax. And Chris Salcido floats the absolutely insane conspiracy theory that Nancy Pelosi wants Brett Kavanaugh to be assassinated so that Joe Biden will get another Supreme Court pick. And this was said during an interview with Illinois Republican Congressman Rodney Davis. Rodney Davis doesn't even say, Chris, that's crazy. That's absolutely insane. Nancy Pelosi wants assassinations now. This all relates to an incident that took place with Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, where an armed man was, I guess, picked up by police a block or two away from Brett Kavanaugh's house. And he was there because he was angry with Brett Kavanaugh. And Chris Salcido says, you know, this might be a plan to actually kill Kavanaugh, in which Pelosi is involved. Take a look at this. The height of irresponsibility.
You know, a lot of folks are starting to ask some questions out there, Congressman. They're openly wondering why Nancy Pelosi sat on a bill that was passed by the Senate to protect Supreme Court justices. Now she's moving after an assassination attempt on Justice Kavanaugh. Are Americans right to question if Pelosi was actually hoping for or encouraging violence that could lead to Joe Biden appointing a new Supreme Court justice?
Well, it's certainly questions that Nancy Pelosi and others need to answer as to—
Pelosi needs to answer. Are you trying to kill a Supreme Court justice so that Joe Biden will get a pick? She must answer that question. It's imperative.
Why she thought somehow Justice Kavanaugh, after having an assassin in his backyard, is somehow safe over the weekend? We could have gotten to this bill last week.
By the way, I don't know that the guy was in the backyard. Not that it matters, but.
But she chose to hold it up, and she needs to answer as to why. I mean, it was 5 years ago that this left-wing gunman, inspired by rhetoric like Republican policies are killing people, tried to kill me and my friends.
By the way, then they show pictures of his house, which is really something else. So this is an outrageous conspiracy theory. And by the way, many of these people celebrated when Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. Understand that. And speaking of which, you know how I've said before, allegations are often confessions, like with the whole election fraud, voter fraud thing leading up to the 2020 election. What they were really saying was, we're going to try to steal the election. They were saying Democrats are planning to steal it. What in reality was is they are planning to steal it. Should it be looked at as to whether Ruth Bader Ginsburg really just genuinely died of disease? Now, of course, I'm being tongue in cheek. I'm being facetious. But if they all of a sudden are so focused on Pelosi's trying to kill Kavanaugh, maybe it's another one of these thinly veiled confessions. And one of the things that is important here, first of all, the absurdity of, I mean, Kavanaugh has armed security and all these different things. Kind of weird that Pelosi's going to try to kill him by sending, you know, some deranged gunman to his backyard when there's all this protection. That doesn't really make sense. But beyond that, violent conspiracies are not only often projection, but they are very common in this. They're common in fascism. They're common in authoritarianism, where you have to constantly talk about these violent threats, which are then used to justify more authoritarianism. And I don't even think Chris Salcido's conspiracy theory is well put together enough to really fall under that. But they are a common sort of feature that we often see. We'll have this clip along with others that we've played on our Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/David Pakman Show. I sadly am going to play for you today some of the scariest audio and video that we've had on the show for a while. We have seen people show up at school boards or city council meetings recently and call for the killing of gay people, of LGBT people. Today, I'm going to play for you a clip of a candidate calling for the killing of the parents of LGBT kids. This is candidate Mark Burns. It might not shock you that Mark Burns is a Trumpist. He loves Trump. He's pro-Trump. He is running in the 4th District in South Carolina. And he called for the arrest and execution of those who advocate for LGBT rights and the protection of trans children. This was during an appearance on the Stu Peters show. And he talked about that he is committed to voting for transphobic laws, which will target LGBT kids and their parents. And then he went further than saying he will just vote for the legislation. He says he wants those parents held for child abuse and put to death if they are convicted. Take a look at this. This is extraordinarily dangerous.
The LGBT transgender grooming our children's minds is a national security threat.
Now, by the way, I hate to already interrupt. When Republicans and right wingers get a new shiny toy, in this case, it's the word grooming. They use it all the time. Grooming has a very specific meaning in the context of child abuse and, saying to your kids, I love you no matter who you are. It's not really grooming. It's actually not at all grooming, but they're just using the word. They're on the word.
Because it is ultimately designed to destabilize the republic we call the United States of America. That's why when I'm elected, I don't want to just vote. I want to start holding people accountable for treason to the Constitution. I am going to push to reenact HUAC. HUAC is the House of Un-American Activities Committee. It was a real committee that was formulated back in the 50s, and is a committee that we should reenact that starts holding these people accountable for treason. We need to hold people for treason, start having some public hearings, and start executing people who are found guilty for their treasonous acts against the Constitution of the United States of America.
Do you understand how insane that is? HUAC. So first of all, I mean, putting to death the parents of LGBT kids, it's dangerously off the rails. But there's another aspect to this. When we talk about HUAC, the House Committee on Un-American Activities, we're talking about McCarthyism. We're talking about a committee that looks at whether Americans have been disloyal. Don't have to have committed any crime. It's just do you think the wrong things, which we have tagged as being a lack of loyalty to the United States? Extraordinarily dangerous candidate. Now, does this guy have a shot at winning? Well, we'll have to wait and see. Would it be a shock to me if this guy actually ended up getting arrested for, domestic violence, child porn, whatever? I'm not saying I have any evidence of that, but no. Oftentimes, the loudest people who say, let me one up even you. It's not enough just to say I'm going to vote. I will demand the killing. Sometimes when people go overboard like that, it's because they have things to hide. We don't know that to be the case with this guy, but that's something that we've seen. But we seem to live in a world where people can freely express their desire for large swaths of people to be killed. Now, I get it. He's not personally threatening to kill anybody. This is not the type of thing where you would say, well, we're from the police and we need to talk to you. But the reaction is, well, yeah, I mean, just if you don't like that, don't vote for him, as if this counts as anything even remotely approximating valid political discourse. It's increasingly dangerous, not only that people are saying these things, but they aren't instantly disqualifying. And we go back to 2016, 2015, Trump and the Access Hollywood tape and the entire thing. At a certain point in American political history, the Access Hollywood grab him by the you know what tape would have been a disqualifier. That would have been it. Just no, you're done. You resign immediately and that's it. It's over. And there is almost nothing that they can't try to explain away at this point in time. Now, this guy is pro-Trump. Trump hasn't endorsed him. So it's not a situation where Trump would pull his endorsement or anything like that. But it's considered just like, oh, yeah, well, no, I'm against killing the people, the parents of LGBT kids, so I'm not going to vote for them. This should be immediately disqualifying. And it's not in modern American politics. Hey, this is a truly bizarre story. Remember this guy, Milo Yiannopoulos? Milo Yiannopoulos was this gay British provocateur who got very involved in American politics. He was a darling of the right and he would say horrible things. And then he had a sort of it's not so much a falling out. He had, I guess we'd call it a PR problem, because he was interviewed in a show, and I want to be careful with the language I use here, where he sort of said it's kind of okay when there are relationships between he wasn't saying prepubescent kids, but he was, I believe, talking about like sort of like 12 and 13 year olds and adult men. It was very, very strange. And he quickly was dropped by the right wing establishment. He was no longer useful to them. And he's made a couple of attempts at comebacks. One of the things he did is he became heterosexual. Now, I know that when I say that, you might be wondering, well, did he really become heterosexual? Was he never actually gay? I don't know. I'm just telling you, he says he is now heterosexual. And I don't even have an interest in commenting on whether that's a real thing. But he claims that he is now heterosexual. And this has allowed him to some degree to at least attempt to re-enter the mainstream American political milieu. He now reportedly is Marjorie Taylor Greene's unpaid intern. This is just bizarre. It's wacky. The Washington Post reporting Milo Yiannopoulos, far-right provocateur, is a Marjorie Taylor Greene intern. Former Breitbart editor is summer intern for Marjorie Taylor Greene. He announced that he had finally been persuaded out of retirement, saying he was hired for an unpaid internship with a friend. He attached a photo of a congressional intern ID badge on top of a Louis Vuitton bag, showing he's an intern in Marjorie Taylor Greene's office. Her office didn't explain what his duties are, but she said, "So I have an intern that was raped by a priest as a young teen, was gay, has offended everyone at some point, turned his life back to Jesus and church, and changed his life. Great story. Great story." The statement was sent after the Washington Post article published. It also suggested the media should interview a colleague of hers about her trans daughter. Greene named the colleague using transphobic language. So it's a completely bizarre story, but it's not only that Milo appears to be an unpaid intern of Marjorie Taylor Greene. Marjorie Taylor Greene also now has a very strange podcast, and he's off camera, but he sort of seems to be like a sidekick here. This is one of the strangest stories I've seen. Here is just 30 seconds of Marjorie Taylor Greene's recent podcast episode. I believe this is from yesterday. And you hear Milo off camera, sort of her sidekick, I guess. Listen to this.
Tell us more. Tell us about California.
Well, California has advanced a bill to become a transgender sanctuary. It was introduced by Democrat Senator Scott Wiener. Why are they always called Wiener?
Why are they always called Wiener? Anthony Wiener, Scott Wiener. They all do all the Wiener. I don't think they all go together.
Now that Milo is heterosexual, he can do that type of thing, I guess. This is a new form of comedy for Milo now that he's newly heterosexual.
Some of them are wanting to get rid of the wieners. I mean, this is like the whole weenie chop thing. Can you imagine being a mother wanting to do that to your
weenie
child?
Chop.
Yeah. I can't comprehend it. I'm sorry. I'm making jokes, but it's not funny.
Yeah. Now, transphobia actually isn't new to Milo. And there is a contingent. There's a transphobic contingent of the gay community. This is just a thing that exists. It's not I'm not personally attacking anyone. There is. You might have heard of trans exclusionary radical feminism called TERF, T-E-R-F. There's also a contingent of the gay community that is not big on that's not big on trans. That when Milo was gay, and again, I'm using the language that he uses, when Milo used to be gay, he also was transphobic. And in fact, when I interviewed Milo years ago on the show, one of the things, if I recall correctly, that we talked about, and I don't know who brought it up, were his views on feminism. I'm sorry. We know his views on feminism were his views on transgender and it exposed his transphobia. So just all very strange. And I don't know what the next step is. Like what's interning for Marjorie Taylor Greene? Where is that a jumping off point to? And I guess we can only wait and see if it's just a summer internship. By the way, Milo's, I think he's almost 40. I don't know. It's all very strange, but there it is. You now know everything that I know. We have a voicemail number, and that number is 2192-DAVID-P. Here's a caller not thrilled with my Alex Jones impression. Listen to this.
Mr. Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Sir. If I might offer a criticism of your show, it's that your Alex Jones impersonation needs a lot of work.
Okay.
See, what you want to do when you're doing an Alex Jones impersonation, you want to make it sound like you've just smoked every cigarette. But you wouldn't know anything about that. You
demon rat. No, in all seriousness, I do enjoy the show. Thank you for your interviewing acumen in general. And I was curious if you agree that in part the rise of Trumpism or fascism, whatever it is you want to call it, there's some responsibility of the people on the left who perhaps are performative in their outrage when something, you know, messed up happens. Because it just kind of seems like there's a whole wing of supporting Trump that deals with, I just want to trigger the libs.
Yeah. Listen, there, I'm not doing a both sides thing, but there is some performative outrage on both sides. It's over very different things, and it's tailored and sort of focused differently. But I've seen performative outrage on the left as well, and I don't participate in it. And I don't even know that I care to get into the specifics right now, but there's performative outrage all over. Now, as far as the Alex Jones impression, is it that bad?
Globalist, internationalist, Trotskyite socialists, unlike Obama, Trudeau, Macron, and the rest of these Zio beasts.
I don't know. I think it's okay. I generally don't think my impressions are very good. I also do Susan Collins. Well, I was very disappointed to see that Donald Trump killed a man, but I think that he's learned his lesson, and I am not in favor of moving forward with any consequences whatsoever. What other ones do I do? I don't know. My impressions are all like a 4 out of 10. I think they're bad, but I think at least it's passable who I'm referring to. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, let's move on. On today's bonus show, there is a Florida abortion ban. This is fascinating because it's the opposite of how these things usually work. There are Jewish groups now saying the Florida abortion ban violates the religious freedom of Jewish folks. This is absolutely brilliant. There are Jewish religious teachings which say in certain cases you should have an abortion. You should have an abortion. And the way that the Florida abortion ban is written would violate the religious freedom of those Jewish folks to access that abortion. And we're going to talk about that on today's bonus show. Secondly, do you remember when Alexander Litvinenko was poisoned by a Russian agent? This was a major story a few years ago. I believe it was polonium. The agent linked to the poisoning of Litvinenko has now died from COVID, which is a bizarre turn of events. And then lastly, Russia has a rebranded McDonald's. It's sort of like a McDonald's clone because of McDonald's closing in Russia. It's called Delicious, That's All. We will talk about whether producer Pat can get vegan treats at the new McDonald's clone. And we will talk about so many other things. Don't miss today's bonus show. I will be on it. Pat will join me. You can sign up at joinpacman.com. Remember, Alex Jones is still against you signing up.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
He still thinks it's predatory.
That is a frickin' predator right there.
Right. I love the bonus show, quite frankly. Sign up at joinpacman.com. Coupon code BIGVOTING22 for a discount. I will see you then.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
DJ Haim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
nuclear holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet, because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh, yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
WRCT, the inside from way out.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
WRCT, the inside from way out.
Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
am especially pleased to be able to announce today that the United States will provide an additional $1 billion security assistance package for Ukraine.
We need to stop the killing in Ukraine. Sending weapons without a diplomatic strategy is just a recipe for endless war and a possible U.S.-Russian confrontation.
The United States announces an additional $1 billion in military aid to Ukraine in a massive arms package announced at NATO headquarters. With no end in sight for the war or U.S. military spending on Ukraine, we'll speak with national security expert Bill Hartung, author of Prophets of War, Lockheed Martin and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex. Then President Biden celebrates Pride Month at the White House amidst attacks on LGBTQ communities.
Just look at what happened in Idaho last weekend. 31 white supremacists stopped just before they reached the Pride celebration, where they apparently planned to unleash violence on people gathering peacefully in a show of their pride. Violent attacks on the community, including ongoing attacks on transgender women of color, make our nation less safe because the attacks are more than ever last year, and they're on pace again this year.
The recent wave of violent confrontations comes amidst an escalation of anti-LGBTQ rhetoric among far-right media figures and politicians. We'll speak with Ari Drennan of Media Matters and the Southern Poverty Law Center's Michael Edison Hayden, whose new Hate Watch analysis has headlined, "Far-right influencers hyped Coeur d'Alene Pride before Patriot Front showed up." We'll also speak with Genesec Gutierrez of Familia, Trans Queer Liberation Movement. She was invited to the White House Pride Month celebration, but declined to protest the detention and deportation of LGBTQ immigrants and asylum seekers. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations Refugee Agency says the number of displaced people displaced from their homes worldwide has reached a staggering new high of over 100 million. That's up from 89 million just a few months ago, due in part to Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the growing food crisis. This is UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi.
Will this also cause people to move? Now, it's very difficult to tell, but I, unfortunately, cannot imagine how. If you have a food crisis on top of everything that I have described, right? War, human rights, climate, you name it. On top of that, you have a food crisis. It will just accelerate the trends that are described in this report and that we have seen accelerating already in the first few months of the year.
The surge in global refugees comes as parts of Africa are facing their worst drought in decades at a time when food and energy costs are soaring. The United Nations has warned 350,000 children in Somalia could die by the end of the summer. A recent report by two UN agencies estimated an all-time high of up to 49 million people in 46 countries could now be at risk of falling into famine or famine-like conditions. Earlier this week, Congressmember Ilhan Omar, who is a Somali refugee, tweeted, "This should be the biggest story in the world right now." The leaders of Germany, France, and Italy have arrived in Ukraine to meet with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. During a stop in the Ukrainian city of Irpin, French President Emmanuel Macron criticized what he called Russian barbarism. Ahead of the trip, Macron repeated his call for Ukraine and Russia to hold talks to end the war.
Because at some point when we have helped as much as possible to resist, and I hope Ukraine will have won, and above all for the fighting to have stopped, we will have to negotiate. The Ukrainian president